This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman, and you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at dcaureview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
There is an alien among us. A superior being from a place called Krypton. Deep in the heart of the city, he watches for signs of danger. Ready to act on a moment's notice. His true name is Kal-El. You know him as Superman.
Maybe you ladies haven't heard about me.
The future of Metropolis is in the hands of the Man of Steel.
Get up.
He's gonna be busy.
I said get up.
Superman.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 288 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media accounts. It's Liam. Liam, we took a week off to celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday here in the States. Well, we didn't really take a week off. We still gave. It is the season of giving, and we did provide a bonus episode last week with taking a week off from our standard fare. So it wasn't truly a week off for us, but a break from the norm, I guess, as we did not review an episode. But we are back at it here, and we have a very special celebration, a joint celebration, in fact, one that you've dubbed maybe the most stupendous name in the history of podcasts, I dare say.
I'd like to think about it. People are calling it the dumbest name they've ever heard. It is none other than Aqua Phantasmonth here on the show.
Should we explain why it's Aqua Phantasmonth, or are we just gonna kind of roll through with this? I don't know.
we're just part of me thinks it's funnier to not explain. But no, look, we as we often do when there's a new DC live action movie coming out, we try to have an appropriate review or two to go along with it. And believe it or not, there's an Aquaman movie coming out this month, at least in the original time that this episode airs, December of 2023. There's an Aquaman movie coming out. And so we thought we could work in a couple of weeks of Aquaman themed episodes. And then this month also marks the 30th anniversary of the Batman Mask of the Phantasm animated movie. And we've got a couple of weeks of episodes that will look back at that movie some 30 years later as well. So that being the joint, our two characters, the Phantasm and Aquaman, coming together in one titanic month, we felt we had no choice but to dub it the aforementioned Aqua Phantasmonth.
There's no better explanation, and you will not find another podcast celebrating Aqua Phantasmonth. Definitely not Aqua Phantasmonth in the way that we do.
The first and only Aqua Phantasmonth celebration.
But I don't know that it'll stick around as a tradition, but if the fans demand it, we could return next year with this. But let's see how the first annual celebration goes here. And to kick things off, Liam, we have saved one of the maybe most memorable episodes, which we are reviewing, of Superman the Animated Series for just this occasion. And we kick things off this month with a review of the Superman the Animated Series episode, A Fish Story. Not A Christmas Story. I think you dubbed it maybe a Fishmas Story would be appropriate based on the month. But no, it's A Fish Story. And this episode originally aired back in May the 8th of 1999, meaning we just celebrated the 24-year anniversary of this episode's original debut here in the States. And Liam, before we get into our review of this and official IMDb synopsis, we will once again remind listeners at home, if you would like to participate in the podcast, we encourage you leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Specifically, if you leave a 5-star review and leave a little blurb about the pod, we'll go ahead and read that out, whatever your comments are about the pod, and then we'll send you a little thank you gift if you get in touch with us to say thank you for leaving the review. So head over to Apple Podcasts, or if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, you don't get a Wrapped. You don't get a Spotify Wrapped if you listen on Apple Podcasts. So it's the least that you can do. And leave a 5-star review. And again, reach out to us. We'll go ahead and send you a little gift ski if we read it on air. No new reviews this week. But Liam, we will get into our official IMDb synopsis here for this week's episode, which is, of course, brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today and subscribe. And not only will you get the entire catalog from Tim Talk, which reviewed every single episode of the DCAU review, you also get the official catalog of the Jump on the Batwagon podcast, which is currently reviewing Superman, the animated series. Don't think they've made it this far to a fish story yet, but they are certainly well on their way. And then you also get our entire podcast library all in one convenient location, streaming exclusively on YouTube's channel, youtube.com/The Pod Tower. Head over today and subscribe.
Absolutely. So this is the synopsis for A Fish Story, which was written by Rich Fogel and Hillary J. Bader, with a story credit by Alan Burnett, directed by Shinichi Tsuji, with music by Lolita Ritmanis, and animation by Group TAC and Jade Animation. We'll get to them. We will get to them. But first, we have the synopsis, and that synopsis reads as such. Lois and Jimmy investigate a series of bizarre marine animal attacks.
Wait a minute, that can't be it.
That's all it is.
Oh my word. No.
Not inaccurate, but lacks depth. That wouldn't even be good enough for a blurb on on the jacket of the book, much less a full synopsis. But that's where we come in, Cal. And what better way to start than we're on a boat.
That's right. Starting things off, we have Lois and Jimmy. That the world's horniest photographer. He's taken some pictures of some wildlife out on Bibbo Bobrovsky's boat, and Lois, who is sporting a brand new fashionable long sleeve T-shirt outfit that she has never worn before on this show, but it still has her trademark purple accents on it, is there asking Bibbo about some wildlife attacks that apparently have been reported. Bibbo mentions that in his 40 years on the water, that he's never heard of such a thing and never seen such a thing, and it's scared a whole bunch of fishermen off, apparently. And wouldn't you know it, just as Bibbo walks off to get some cold cans of soda, he misses all the action as a bunch of flying fish appear, and boy do they actually fly. And also as they appear and Jimmy is wowed by them, they knock his camera out of his hand into one of the attached fishing nets.
How did Clark manage to miss out on this?
Smallville's got a problem with seasickness. Says the only waves he can stand are amber waves of grain.
Whoa! Awesome!
Ow! Ah! You got the camera?
I'm lucky I got my fingers. That was close.
That was closer.
Whoa. 40 years at sea, I ain't never seen whales act like this before.
Bibbo, you have to radio for help.
No can do, Miss Lane.
If we don't do something, we're fish bait.
Maybe not.
radio antenna was also damaged, I guess, in the jostling. Not the highest quality radio antenna. So they can't even radio for help, as Bubo points out. But luckily, thanks to one of our favorite episodes of all time, Superman's Pal, Dollar in the Bad Episode Jar, we have a way for Jimmy to contact Superman by setting off the watch alarm, which calls for Superman. We did mention, by the way, Clark was supposed to join them, but Lois makes a crack that he suffers from seasickness, and the only waves that he appreciates are the amber waves of grain, which I thought was a funny line in and of itself. Superman is quick to respond and is there just in time to not only save Jimmy, who was a part of who fell into the water, seemingly lost forever. Superman revives the craft from sinking and begins to take on the whales. These whales jump so high, and defy gravity so much, and then bang their heads into each other. Superman's quickly, I guess, turned into like Moe from the Three Stooges, and he just moves out of the way in time for these guys to bonk each other's heads, which is enough to, I guess, to rescue everybody at this point, because the marine life seems to leave them alone at this point. However, of course, Lois and Jimmy are somewhat shook from the attack and believe that there's more to this story. So what do they do? Lois decides to go and investigate by speaking with a marine biologist. And she picks, of all the marine biologists in Metropolis, she just happens to pick the one that is loosely affiliated with Lex Luthor, as we'll find out here shortly.
Animal behavior is very complex, Miss Lane. During mating season, for example, they exhibit all manner of bizarre behavior.
Since when is attacking ships a mating ritual?
The whales who attacked you were probably protecting a calf or an expectant mother. Taken in context of the marine world, there's really nothing unusual going on.
Yeah, right.
Are you really saying...
I'm sorry, you'll have to excuse me. No rest for the wicked.
Lois believes there's more to the story there, and as she and Jimmy are leaving the parking lot, she recognizes a limousine that is parked, and as they drive through the parking lot, so this causes Lois to go back inside and see if she can find out more about just what is going on. As she enters back into the building, who does she run into, Liam? But of course, Lex Luthor.
Absolutely. So as she runs inside, she, as you said, makes her way through the bowels of the building and comes across this very loud banging sound. And very quickly, she discovers the source of that banging. It's a blonde fella floating in a tube of water. It's Aquaman. And quite a bit of different Aquaman than we've talked about on this show, very much the classic Aquaman, as we'll talk about. But as we come back from break, as she's discovering that the doctor and a very large man who also looks a lot like Aquaman. You have two very large blonde men with the same haircut in this episode. I'll try to save the rest of these for visuals. But yes, Lois and Aquaman are captured, and Luthor instructs the doctor to take them further inland to try to stop whatever's going on with the marine life attacks, and also to keep everything quiet with what's going on with them experimenting on Aquaman. But once Lex finds out that they've also taken Lois, Lex is very frustrated, pointing out that anytime Lois Lane gets kidnapped, that's like a neon flashing sign for Superman to get involved. He's watched the show, so he knows.
Speaking of watching the show, I mentioned this too before we started recording, but mm-hmm. I have a fan theory that Dr. Cardi here, who is the marine biologist in this mm-hmm. episode, he is solely responsible for obtaining the shark that this is my fan theory, the shark that floats in the tank in Lex Luthor's office. And this is how these two became familiar. familiar with each other, thus leading to this odd friendship. Because what other reason would Lex Luthor have to be friends with a marine biologist or associates with a marine biologist? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it doesn't really. Based on what Lex is doing in this episode, there's no real reason that, like, a doctor needed to be involved, because he's just blowing stuff up, as we find out, doing weapons tests. I don't think you need a marine biologist for that. But hey, he's got this guy on the payroll. And once he finds Lois involved, he decides none of this is worth the struggle, and tells them to get rid of both Aquaman and Lois. And so they drive to a nearby garbage dump, and they're going to execute them summarily. But thankfully, Aquaman's powers, which really strains what I've always understood, what's considered marine life or sea creatures.
Yeah, as he says. Seagulls being sea creatures that's a big stretch.
Right. I mean, there's water nearby, but like they come pretty far inland. I don't know that they count as marine life in the same way sharks and squids and things we see in this episode do.
Would a marine biologist study a seagull? Is the question like right. they like? Yes,
Any
they're
control
they're
ducks.
Like, they're like right. They're like sea adjacent. Like, does that mean that he can like control algae? Like, does right. he control? Does he control like the biological creatures that
right.
like what else can he control? Because in my mind it's like sharks, fish, octopus, seahorse.
Yeah,
like
I guess we see turtles and like a walrus that are also going crazy earlier in the episode, so I draw the line at walrus.
Nope,
the walrus just hates Jimmy Olsen.
No, I mean, they clearly made him
right.
Aquaman be able to control him, but in my Aquaman set of powers, no, I draw the line at walrus. No, sorry. Can he control frogs too? Because
right.
the water, like alligators, like what else can he control?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, turtle, sea turtles would suggest reptiles, which opens us up to whichever. right. Whatever, is it crocodiles or salt water or the other way around? I don't know. Anyway,
we need a marine biologist. Is anyone here a marine biologist?
Someone let us know all the things that Aquaman controls in this episode and if there is precedent for it. Specifically the birds, though. That's the one that really got to us, as mentioned, as Aquaman calls on the seagulls to distract the two thugs, and he and Lois are able to take them down, including Lois just killing one. She kills this man by dropping a motorcycle. She like jumps the motorcycle and punches him with the front tire. That man is dead.
He did.
But she and Aquaman escape on the motorcycle for a bit, being chased by Luthor's security force. Thankfully, Luthor's security force, despite him being like a private businessman and he's always about like not letting anything tie back to him, they just have the giant LexCorp logo on their chest.
Don't get me started with what these guys even were for this episode, but yeah.
But yes, they're chasing Aquaman and Lois, and Aquaman tells Lois to drive off a cliff.
Get me, Luthor.
Neat trick back there. How did you...
I communicate with the creatures of the sea telepathically. There's not much time. I need to get out to the blast site.
These guys have something else in mind.
Does it, by golly. And
Lois answers the the age old question, which was, if a strange man that you met just moments before told you to drive a motorcycle off a cliff, would you do it? And the answer is yes.
Apparently. So they do. And as the security men look down, they're preparing to open fire on Lois, but then they see a shark in the water. And despite the fact that they're dealing with Aquaman and that all this marine life has been acting so strange, they just decide, well, the shark's going to eat her. And they don't fire on her. And it does appear, as we end that act of the episode, that Lois is swallowed up by the giant shark. Although at the beginning of the next act, we see very quickly that she's brought back to the surface, and that the shark was once again aiding Aquaman. And as he's explaining to Lois that he has armies of sea creatures surrounding them, Superman finally shows up. He briefly interrogates the two goofball thugs.
Wait, before we continue, we have to talk about the hilarity. Superman knows about this because Jimmy Olsen spills the beans to Clark back at the Daily Planet about this scenario in which he was driving Lois's car around the parking lot, which is a weird comedy detour that feels like it came out of nowhere. Like Jimmy Olsen, who only has a learner's permit, is forced to drive Lois's car around the parking lot of this
stick shift.
It's a stick shift. So
he's grinding the gears.
He's struggling with it. He can't find a parking place in the parking lot of the Marine Biology Center. And so he's driving around. Somebody keeps honking at him because he can't double park. And then he ends up colliding with Lex Luthor's tanker truck that's carrying Lois and Aquaman out of the parking lot, unbeknownst to Jimmy. Jimmy's not able to get Lois on the car phone, the comically oversized car phone that he has, that Lois has in the car. But he has a minor fender bender with the tanker truck, who keeps on driving, and then this forces Jimmy into a lane with the spikes up. It's an entry only lane, so the spikes up, they blow Lois's tires out, and then Jimmy has to go confess his sins to Clark at the Daily Planet, which gives Clark his radar goes off that something may be afoot when he learns that Jimmy can't get a hold of Lois, and that she was last seen entering this strange marine biology center, thus leading to eventually Superman catching up with and realizing that there was a Lex Luthor connection all along and tracking them down.
Absolutely. So Superman arrives, interrogates the thugs, and they let him in on where Lois is. So as mentioned, he rescues Lois from the water. And Aquaman sort of, he and Superman have a bit of a standoff, but Aquaman goes zooming away on the back of one of the sharks. And as Lois fills Superman in on what's going on. And of course, Aquaman, I think when they're in the back of the truck, mentions that the reason he came to the surface originally was on something of a diplomatic mission to try to get these companies, specifically LexCorp, as we find out, to stop them testing weapons so close to where Atlantis is, as that's causing havoc on their city. So
Aquaman, huh?
Something wrong?
No, it's just that I always thought you were an urban legend.
Nothing urban about me.
So, you gonna tell me what's going on?
Some of your people...
My people?
Surface dwellers. They're about to cause the death of millions. I have to stop them.
Aquaman is determined now, after being captured and nearly killed, that it's time to take more direct action against this LexCorp sub that's out trying to detonate these weapons tests. Superman and Lois arrive. I love this bit where Superman and Lois crash through the top of the sub. And they have their standoff with Luthor, and meanwhile Aquaman is in the water fighting with Lex's guys, who have these like weird little sub scooter things that they're floating around on, and there's a guy with a big drill, and as they're drilling into the earth to prepare this bomb test, Superman decides, well, he's got to go into the water and help Aquaman, and he leaves by making a different hole in the roof. I think that's a really understated funny bit where they crash through one hole and then he crashes out in another hole to leave to go help Aquaman in the water. Of course, Aquaman and Superman do defeat all of Lex's men seemingly, and as Aquaman and Superman arrive back on the surface, let's just say all bets are off, and Aquaman is done talking at this point.
That's right. We get the appearance of the rest of the Atlantean war force. Lots of weaponized subs. We see what I've dubbed as Aquaman's Whale Force One, which is this gigantic, like, what can only be described as the Max Fleischer Superman era painting of this, like, gigantic whale shaped submarine. It's like the windows are the teeth, and it's kind of like squared off. I don't know how it's in any way functional whatsoever, but sure, it's shaped like a giant whale. And then we have all these other weapons, and they basically have pulled all of their weapons up and they're pointing them at the ship and telling Lex that the time for talking has ended, and now it's time for action, as you mentioned.
Sounds like your assets are getting kicked.
Will you please get her out of here?
My pleasure.
Now then, arm for detonation.
But our own men are still down there.
And their beneficiaries will be well compensated.
Luthor said to get you out of there, but he didn't say to where.
Oh, no, you don't. You...
Armed and ready, sir.
Very good. It's over, Luthor. Maybe. For now. No. Forever.
At the last second, Superman steps in and tells them, nope, can't do this. You won't do this. I'll defend them. And this leaves Aquaman a bit taken aback as he reminds Superman that not only are these eco-terrorists polluting the ocean, but they're also polluting the same sky that Superman flies. And Superman is quick to step in and mention to him that not all of the people of the surface are like Lex Luthor, that there are people that are fighting against him and to stop the pollution and such. So this causes Aquaman to back down, but he threatens that they'll be watching. The very arrogant and boisterous ship's captain that attempted to throw Lois overboard at one point in the midst of this chicanery decides that he's going to take matters into his own hands at this point, and he gets a harpoon gun or mans the harpoon gun and fires it at Aquaman. Aquaman, who has cat-like reflexes. I know cats are not, I assume they're not marine life.
Catfish-like reflexes.
Good. Yes. Catfish-like reflexes, flips around, catches the harpoon right in front of his chest. And, let's just say the return fire is not exactly on the same level of a harpoon being launched, as, they completely decimate Lex's ship, and this causes Lex to flee, get into his helicopter, Lex Force One, I guess, or what's the name of the president's helicopter? Air Force Two? I forget what they call the helicopter, but yeah, it's Lex's helicopter equivalent to the president's, and flies off with Mercy, and leaving all of his men behind to suffer the consequences as Aquaman's and the Atlanteans just can fire off a barrage against the Luthor ship, causing it to sink. Superman stands by protecting Lois, but is left to see the sinking ship as it's going down. And Aquaman gives an ominous warning that he'll cease the attack that they were planning at this time, the response to the surface dwellers. But he promises that the Atlanteans will be watching as they return to the water, sinking back down, as Superman and Lois are left to watch.
the surface dwellers to respect the sovereignty of my seas, or we'll return and finish what we've started. We'll be watching.
Episode. It's a very odd place to end it, and I think as we get into our plot scores here, Liam, this is a very weird episode. Tonally, it's very strange. I feel like, and I don't know if it. I think you mentioned we have three different names credited at the top that had their hands in this story. All people that are well respected and wrote good good episodes. Is it Mr. Fogel and Miss Bader and Alan Burnett? Right.
Yes, it's a story credit for Alan Burnett. Just gets the story by, and then the written by is Mr. Fogel and Hilary Bader. So yeah, there's. Yeah, three regulars that we talk about all the time on the show who have all written and penned great episodes by themselves and in collaboration with each other before. So
I just I don't know about you, and we'll get your thoughts here, but I think it just tonally it changes very quickly. We have that weird comedy scene with Jimmy that is kind of shoehorned in there, which is good. It's lighthearted, but again, doesn't really fit with the rest of the episode. I don't know if it's because I've seen similar stories told in the last 30 years, but the idea that Aquaman is sort of responding because of pollution, and that's his response is to attack like that's his motivation for wanting to or be at odds with the surface dwellers, I don't know, feels kind of old hat now, so I really don't like that motivation as a I don't know why his motivation couldn't just be Lex captured him. Like, why isn't the motivation to bring him to the surface would have been, it is fine, but like, isn't it enough that he's the king of Atlantis and he, like, this is sort of like an act of war by somebody on the surface towards this? Couldn't you just use that as the motivation? Because the stuff at the end where he's like, oh, well, they're polluting our oceans and they're, you know, destroying this, and it feels like a tacked on I don't know, like a talking point that somebody was like, yeah, let's make Aquaman really concerned about the environment, which, again, like, you can draw real world parallels in your stories, but it just feels a little bit like a PSA. Like, it feels a little bit out of like 80s G.I. Joe PSA, like, don't pollute the ocean, kids, which, again, is a good message. We shouldn't pollute the ocean, but it just feels like. It just feels so lame for this character, especially this characterization with this voice and the way that he kind of acts in this episode, for that to be his main motivation. I don't know. It feels also weird that if he was so mad about all this stuff that he just kind of steps down when Superman's like, no, you can't do this. It's like, well, why doesn't he put up a fight against Superman? Why doesn't, like, who is Superman to him? Superman sort of intimates that he knows him. Or knows about him, because when he sees Aquaman for the first time riding the shark, he goes, is that who I think it is? And she goes, yeah, Aquaman in the flesh. Yeah, so it's like,
well, there's a line earlier where she mentions Aquaman as something of an urban legend in, I don't know if that's in the world or in Metropolis only or what, but so there's the idea that he has been active for some time enough that he has something of a reputation, even though it seems there's no, I guess there would be no news footage of him, or no one has seen him until now.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels weird that he was ready to wipe Luthor off the face of the earth. And he feels like this, you know, he was captured. He was literally, he's the king of this country, and he was taken captive against his will and held for like testing, you know, they were going to do tests on him and stuff, and they tried to kill him also, but he's so quick to back down to Superman. It just, I don't know, it just doesn't feel it just felt like that last little sequence was very rushed, in that they were just like, all right, we got to wrap things up. Superman's going to fly in and just be like, no, you can't do that. And he's going to be like, okay, I won't do that. But then it also is left very ominously. And again, you know, I don't know at this point, this is very late in the run, I believe, of the Superman episodes. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, final few episodes here. So I don't know if they had, it feels like things are kind of left on a, on a note to continue this story at some point, because he's like, we'll be watching. And the right. episode literally ends with like this crescendo of music that feels like it's the end of part one, and we got anything else.
Oh yeah, so I was gonna say, this feels like part one of two, and we just never got a part two. Mm-hmm. I think, knowing where the shows would go in the future, you could say that the Enemy Below two-parter does pick up a lot of these themes.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Aquaman having a contentious relationship with the surface world, and sort of being very aggressive in defending his, you know, his sovereign nation against, what is it? It's like the nuclear sub or whatever that sinks in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it does get picked up, but that's like two shows from now. And as we said, we review the, you know, in a bubble, I don't feel like this is a very satisfying ending. And it does feel like it's setting up some broader conflict where either Superman is going to have to take a side one way or the other, or, you know, something's got to give here. Or there has to be like a third threat that pops up where Superman and Aquaman have to put aside their differences and fight together, which I guess they kind of do because they stop a guy from drilling a hole and the bombs from going off. But yeah, it just feels like, I agree. Like, I think the idea of Aquaman was captured and they just kind of have him in a tank. Like, they're not, I guess the doctor's talking about wanting to run experiments on him and figure out where he's from and everything, but feels like that would be a bigger deal. And then once he reveals that he's the king of a nation under the sea that has this incredibly credible military, it feels like, well, that seems like something that, like, I don't know, General Hardcastle or one of our, you know, military characters we've introduced on this show would care about. And so it feels like you're setting up for this broader conflict between, as you said, Aquaman and the Atlanteans against the surface, with Superman kind of caught in the middle of it. But we don't get that, at least not in this show.
Mm-hmm.
So it does feel a little stunted. And yeah, the first maybe, you know, 5 to 8 minutes of this have a very light and almost like, I don't know, like a, I was going to say like a, like, I don't want to say E.T., but like that flavor of movie where like you discover the thing and then the bad guys are after you because they want to capture the thing, you know, the alien or whatever. And so he, Ian Lois, are on the run and he's like, let's drive over the cliff. And it's like it has this weird like 80s teen adventure feel to it in some weird way to me.
Yeah.
I don't dislike that.
It also felt a little bit of a romance there too, right?
Isn't right.
Like, he's hitting on her. Like, I can ask the sharks if they're hungry. Like,
right, yeah, he has like a little bit of a he's teasing her a little bit, and he saves her from the thugs, and then Superman literally rises out of the water and takes her away from him. So, yeah, it feels like there's if this had had a part two, you know, there's something here where, you know, Superman and Aquaman either come to blows or are about to, and Lois maybe has to take a role as sort of peacemaker to help them see whatever the larger threat is here. But yeah, as it stands, it's a little bit uneven as a plot, and we'll get to it in the visuals a little bit. It's just the action just isn't very interesting in the episode either, for introducing this character who's a guy who can breathe and fight underwater and is strong and fast and all this stuff. It's all right. Like, there's some clever ideas, like the shark, you know, looking like it eats Lois, and then you find out it saved her. Like, that's kind of a fun sequence. And then the squid rising to pick up Aquaman and Lois to bring her out of the water when she's thrown in at the end. That's kind of fun, but it just doesn't feel like we get the maximum enjoyment out of like what the fun of a character like Aquaman is. either. And we'll, again, we'll talk about that. Maybe that's on the limitations of who was animating this episode. But yeah, as it stands, I kind of like the first half of it when it's a little bit lighter and more and almost comedic. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, the second final act just takes a very different tone. And then to me, it doesn't really have a great payoff because, again, it's like, well, Lex is caught testing bombs and he's like, well, this is international waters. You can't stop me. But then he does try to murder Superman and Aquaman and Lois Lane, and I'm pretty sure if you try to murder someone in international waters, you could still be like arrested and extradited for that.
Let's say otherwise, wouldn't everybody just go to international waters to do their murdering? Like, right. I'm not a murderer, so I don't know how to think. I wouldn't necessarily think like one, but if I was a murderer,
right?
I sound like OJ Simpson now. If I was a murderer, this is how I'd do it. Like, it seems like everybody would just go to the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, I feel like you can still be
no jurisdiction here. Yeah, you can't try a husband and wife for the same crime.
But yeah. So all that to be said, I think there's some fun, but the second half and the kind of weird tonal shift and the lack of like a real payoff for the conflict that's being set up here, I ended up on a pretty low 4 out of 10 for my flat score.
Yeah, I was generous by 1 point. I gave it a 5 out of 10. I do like the action of the, like, it's kind of cool seeing Lex's ship get destroyed. Like, I don't know how you think there were that's a pretty big ship. There was probably a big staff there. I'd like to say there's probably some death that occurred. There's no record of Superman saving anybody from drowning either. So did Superman let some people die? Maybe. We don't know.
Well, see a lot of them in the water, like yelling and shaking their fists at Lex as he flies away in the helicopter.
Maybe they're team members with the scuba diving gear. I don't know. Yeah, very, very interesting. I mean, it's kind of cool just seeing the barrage that they give off just destroying Lex's ship there. I think the Jimmy sequence in the parking lot, albeit maybe tonally doesn't fit with everything else, was funny. Like, it felt kind of out of like the old Superman movies. Like, it would be in like one of the Christopher Reeve movies. Like, you could definitely see that sequence of just kind of like relatable comedy of like not knowing how to drive a stick shift, or you know, looking, not being able to find a parking place, all that stuff. Like, yeah, it's funny and relatable. But I just think, you know, it uneven is probably the word that I would use for this episode. And with the episodes that this show had with guest stars, let's see, the Batman excluded, right? Batman's, it's hard to mess up a Superman Batman crossover, but I would say Dr. Fate, we didn't love. I'm pretty sure that's in the bad episode jar. We liked the Green Lantern episode. We did not like this episode. The Legion of Superheroes episode was okay. I don't remember loving or hating that episode. It feels like you're kind of gifted a cheat code in this and having a crossover, and it feels a little bit like fumbling the ball on the goal line, because you, instead of punching it in for the touchdown, to use an American football colloquialism, it feels like maybe the expectation was a little bit higher. Like, hey, let's have a really fun crossover episode where you're introduced this character. We like the Flash episode too, I guess, before we get some angry tweets. But I would say that this one, I get it. Aquaman's an interesting character and maybe one that's difficult to characterize, especially in this time before you had like the cool badass Jason Momoa version to fall back on. He was the Super Friends guy that talks to fish, you know.
They did make a decision to not adapt, although they did change that later again in Justice League, to do the at the time current long hair hook-handed Aquaman. They chose to do the very archetypal classic version of the character, which is in line with a lot of, you know, the way they would with some exceptions how they would generally look at adapting characters into this DCAU, at least at this point.
But I did read a note also that I think that I believe it was Mr. Fogel who said that they decided to sort of base the characterization a little bit more off of Namor from the Marvel comics.
Correct, because he's always hitting on Sue Storm.
Right. There you go. Maybe taking that and trying to make it a super serious character while not necessarily fleshing out the motivation in a way that makes sense for the entirety of the episode sort of kind of suffered when it comes to our plot here. So lower scores maybe than one would expect for a crossover episode, Liam. All right. Let's move on to our next category, and we've been dancing around it. We've been mentioning it several times here. We might as well start off with the aforementioned design in visuals and animations here of our Aquaman here. Liam, I got to ask you, are you team orange shirt and green pants? Or are you team long yellow hair and hook hand?
Well, this is tough because being that I was born in 1993, I have a great deal more affinity for the long hair and hook hand.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that orange and green, as weird as that and as much of like a color clash as that should be,
mm-hmm.
there is something just innately iconic about this classic Aquaman look.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this fits better for this more sort of aloof, like we said, like you just said, a more Namor based version of the character. So I think it works, but it's not my preferred version. They've kind of combined the two looks in the current DC comics. They've given him back the long hair and the beard, but he doesn't have the hook anymore, and he's in the classic orange and green suit. So mm-hmm. Maybe there's a gift somewhere in the middle, but I wasn't adversely affected. I do remember at the time being a kid, and this is before I really understood the difference between on-screen and comic continuities, not understanding why he looked so much different than he did in the Adventures in the DC Universe animated style comics that were on shelves at the time that we would get, so which was just adapting the straight hook-handed bearded Aquaman. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we got this look, because I think I would always wonder what if if we didn't get that Bruce Timm style classic Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
But give me the hook hand. He barely even uses a trident. He uses it one time in this episode. He's so bare bones in this episode.
Yeah, he's too busy riding sharks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm team long haired and beard. I don't know, just something about a clean cut Aquaman that just feels, I don't know. He needs to have that hyper masculine look to me. Give him the hairy chest and the he didn't have a hairy chest in the JLU look, but comic book wise, he typically is a rugged sort of like a Marty Stauffer looking guy from a Wild America show.
Yeah, he's a bit Arthurian,
for sure.
Pun very much intended, but he's got the. It's still very regal and, mm-hmm. and king-like, but yes, the long flowing hair and the bushy beard is I think it adds a lot to that design.
Plus, when you're underwater, the hair flow, you know, mm-hmm. just look at what it's done for Jason Momoa. I mean, that guy was just a normal looking fella that nobody would have looked twice at, and then suddenly you give him CGI flowing hair, and here he is, he's on the cover of GQ. I kid, of course. But in the rest of the episode, let's talk about Group TAC and Jade Animation, because woo-wee, they've developed quite the reputation here. They're kind of neck and neck with another one of our least favorite animation studios. They're not quite at that level, but they are creeping up there as far as notoriously bad for their reputation here. This group also did Superman's Pal, maybe infamously, another episode that we just absolutely decimated and did not care for. But mm-hmm. it seems like they got a bunch of episodes here in the last little run of Superman the Animated Series episodes. I think we may have talked about that before, speculation that the other studios were working on, I guess, Beyond at the time and the new Batman Adventures, maybe.
We are into that period where Batman Beyond, I guess, I mean, this is airing in May. Batman Beyond debuts in September of 99, I believe. So it's like we're that this is the period where they're working on all three shows at the same time. So I'm sure there was things were a little rough in the in what the animation studios were able to take on at this point. But with the yeah, so this is specifically a joint between this group TAC company and Jade, who partnered with Jade on all their Superman episodes. Jade had previously done some work on Batman with including the very memorably terrible trio episode. once again, pun intended. That was my main thing. Whereas, like, if nothing else in this episode, a lot of it takes place underwater, and there's sharks and squids and flying fish and sea turtles and all manner of marine life. It should really be more interesting and exciting than it is. I think the best bit, and it's also something I think after we very recently had a friend of the show, Kevin Altieri, on again, and he mentioned, like, hey, some studios aren't great at, like, keeping people on model, but they're really good at something else. Mm-hmm. And so you storyboard to their strengths as a studio. And I thought that was a really, so I was trying to look at, like, okay, what's something that it's clear this TAC group and Jade do well. I like the way the water is animated, especially in the last scene when the big ship comes out of the water. Aquaman's sub comes out of Whale Force One, as you called it. Like, the way the water kind of cascades off of it creates almost this giant tidal wave. Mm-hmm. And then when it sinks back down to the water at the end, it kind of creates this whirlpool as it's going down. Mm-hmm. So I think they do a really good job there. As far as, like, faces and people being on model, and, like, the animation feeling the least bit fluid. Oh boy, this is just not a lot to write home about here. And again, also, like, the environments for our actual, like, fights in this episode. Aquaman's punching some guys in a junkyard. And then we have this bit underwater. I do like the bit where Superman's tangling with the giant drill, and he stops the drill with his hands, and then the sub starts spinning because mm-hmm. he stopped the drill. That's a fun bit of visual comedy there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just thought, like, for the amount of cool looking stuff in this episode, a lot of good designs, like we said, it should be better. It should be more interesting to look at. And the other thing I noticed was that Jade doesn't seem to be good at registering, like, emotion on, and maybe that comes, some of that is on storyboard artists as well, but like that last scene when the Atlanteans start opening fire and Lois, like, yells no, and they cut to Lex and he's like, get us out of here, and everyone is just, like, stone faced. Like, their faces do not match the tone of their voice acting at all. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, like, there's not a lot of great stuff. And it's not like anyone's super off model. I know in Superman's Pal, we had some real issues with scaling and people being off model. I didn't really get the sense they're off model so much in this episode as they are just, like, real stiff and rigid and not particularly expressive.
Yeah, their faces move around a lot too. Like, when they're standing still, like, they're I don't know, like, there's this weird shifting. There's a couple of close-up shots of Lois's face where her eyes seem to be moving from frame to frame. Mm. Very odd. I also like that opening shot. I know that killer whales, like, jump out of the water, like Free Willy, obviously, is maybe mm-hmm. the most notorious and a memorable example of a killer whale jumping out of the water. But the killer whales in that opening scene appeared to jump, like, 50 feet in the air. So it's just something that was, like, clearly got lost in the translation of, like, this is, they aren't superheroes. Like, they aren't flying yeah. whales. Like, why are they so high in the air? Yeah, that was odd. I guess maybe I should talk about a couple of the things I did like. I did like the shot of Aquaman catching the harpoon. Again, I don't understand how cool.
Yeah.
how he did it. He maybe one of his seagull spies told him that it was coming towards him or something. I don't know, but just the shot of him turning around and him just kind of death staring the ship captain before this opening shot or the first shot is fired from Atlantis's side. I did like that. I guess we should also mention all the explosions in that sequence are reused from various different Superman episodes. According to the DCAU wiki, they picked out the episodes. So if you're interested, I think one of them was the Volcana episode. One of them is from a Metallo episode. And the third one escapes me. Yeah, I think one of the things, speaking of Max Fleischer, I mentioned Whale Force 1 reminds me of something right out of a Max Fleischer Superman short. One of the things that I did see that seemed to be perhaps a direct homage or reference to the Fleischer Superman, very specifically, there's an image in, I believe it's Superman versus the Mechanical Monsters. We reviewed that way back in the archives. You can check that one out if you're interested. But there's a very famous sequence where Superman spreads his cape out to protect Lois from this molten lava that's pouring down on her, and he spreads his cape out. We actually saw that sequence repeat itself later on in an episode of Superman the Animated Series also. But then in that sequence where Lois and in this episode where Lois and Superman are on the top of this whale ship, and all of Atlantis is firing its weapons at Lex's ship, if you just look down kind of in the lower middle of the sequence, you can see Superman standing in front of Lois with his cape spread out, which I thought was kind of cool. Like, that's a neat little detail that they did there that didn't have to be there. He could have just been shielding her, but again, kind of draws off of that inspiration that so much of this show was drawn to. A neat little detail. But yeah, the rest of the episode, for as interesting as a subject, as you mentioned, the Superman with the drill part, I thought was pretty fun. But you really have a lack of interaction with a lot more marine life. Yes, you get the sharks. But I really wanted to see more marine life. Like, I want to see big squids in action, taking out the guys under the water. I want to see, you know, seahorses, giant seahorses come in. Like, we didn't get any of that stuff. So yeah, I was a little bit disappointed with the type of action that we saw from the animals. But again, maybe that's something that the studio wasn't comfortable with animating, other than the, you know, we get the shark fake devouring Lois and then bringing her out of the water. So yeah, I was a little underwhelmed, I guess, with the marine life interaction. So all of that to say, really not a great looking episode. Yeah. I thought the sequence with Lois taking the motorcycle over the cliff was fun when she asks him if she hopes he can fly. And then the next scene is them just tumbling towards the water and landing in the water. That was interesting. Superman crushing the hands of Lex's aforementioned motorcycle guys was kind of cool too. There's some close-up shots there of Superman looking very menacing. Feels like as far as air date is concerned, this is after he posed as Batman in the crossover episode. So maybe he was really embracing that role of being more intimidating in this episode. But yeah, as far as the images and the way that the animation, really, really not consistent or solid animation throughout. Maybe good for what this animation studio could do, but again, that's like saying it's the best ACOM episode. It's not necessarily a compliment when it comes to Jade and Group TAC. So I ended up giving animation visuals a 4 out of 10 for this week's episode. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it the same score, higher than I believe I gave Superman's Pal a 0 out of 10. So you know, sometimes you can only go up from where you start once you hit rock bottom. But yeah, like I said, I think there are some cool visual moments in the episode. I like this. I feel like you said, like, the Aquaman ship has really nice scale to it, and the way the water cascades off of it. The whale attack at the beginning is kind of funny, I think. And I will just mention, that's another, we've talked before, this Superman show, it may not have quite the litany of predictions that came true that the Simpsons had, but we've already talked about in past episodes, they predicted the Space Force.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. I don't know if you've looked at the news recently. There's been like an exceptional amount of killer whale attacks in mm-hmm. the last mm-hmm. of them damaging ships and sinking ships.
Uh-huh.
Now the whales in real life are a lot smarter and they just go right for the propellers.
Right.
They don't like ram their heads into it until they crack the boat in half. But yes, I was like, here's another modern news item predicted by Superman the Animated Series. So we're gonna have to start like a litany or a list here to keep track of,
because add it to the wiki page, like DCAU events that have come true in real life or predicted the future.
Absolutely. So I just wanted to mention that. But yeah, overall, not a super strong episode. My other thought was like, I don't know why it didn't necessarily click with me, or have we ever talked about how Bibbo is just Popeye?
I think we have mentioned it before. He's got like
has like the one eye. That yep. was what I was drawn to immediately in this one. He doesn't have the pipe, but he has like it's the sailor's house, and he has like the one eye is permanently closed, and he has the little black dots. There's no whites in his eye. It's like, oh, he's just Popeye. Like I don't know. I guess we haven't done an episode that featured Bibbo in a while or something, but I was like, oh yeah, I don't know if we've ever talked about that before.
It's his, according to the DCAU wiki, this episode is his swan song. As far as vocally is concerned, he does appear in Hereafter in Justice League, but does not have a speaking part, ironically.
Which is weird, because Brad Garrett's in that episode.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you would have figured they would have gotten him to do a one-liner or something as Bibbo, mm-hmm. but maybe they felt it would be too distracting. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. Lolita Ritmanis responsible for the music. And I would say this is I don't know. I don't think that there's not a lot of standout hummable themes, but I do think that maybe music has the chance at being the best category for this episode, just because it does. I felt like it did punctuate the action scenes, and the it kind of ups the ante a lot in the scenes, creating more tension, creating more drama, especially with the, you know, when Lois first discovers him, him being Aquaman trapped underneath the center, wherever they are, the lab where they are.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of this like weird tune that plays when she discovers him. Didn't know where to insert this either, but the sound design for the Aquaman telepathy usage, it's not the same classic sound effect from Super Friends, but it's clearly in the same neighborhood. Like they were like, do this, but play it just a little bit differently. Obviously not music, but I did appreciate that. Never know when and where to insert that. But I would say the standout piece for me is the final piece where they unleash hell on Lex's ship, and it just kind of crescendos and continues to crescendo and continues mm-hmm. to crescendo until the firing stops. And again, we have this very intimidating warning from Aquaman at the very end, where he threatens and says, you know, we'll be watching in his Aquaman mm-hmm. voice. And then crescendos at like the cutoff and the fade to black. So yeah, very, very interesting. I didn't think there was anything too different about the music. It's pretty, as far as standard fare for the show, there was not a lot unique about the instruments that were used. It's horns, it's strings, it's your classic orchestral themes. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the action sequences, the sequence with them being chased on the motorcycle, all that stuff is punctuated pretty well. And Ms. Ritmanis did a quite the good job here as far as the pieces that were chosen for this episode.
Yeah, I always feel like when we come to Superman, and I guess we'll find out if that was just a new Batman Superman Adventures theme or something specific for this show, I always notice the percussion a little bit more in Superman, because it's not heavy, but it's just, you'll just hear these big booming, you know, toms or kick drums that they bring in there that always punctuate with the those big moments. Like when the ship's sinking, you kind of get these very, very grand horns that They kind of start out high and then sort of descend as the ship starts to go down. And I thought that was very clever as a way to sort of match what's happening on the screen. And then you just get these very simple, you know, almost sounds like war drums or something going, just, you know, these single beats against the music there. I think that does a pretty good job. So I ended up with a pretty strong score for music, just because maybe I was just desperate to find something good to say about this episode. But I ended up giving music a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I gave it the exact same score, 7 out of 10. I think, as I mentioned, the final sequence is probably my favorite of the episode, but overall, I think it's solid across the board. And all right, Liam, let's move on to our final category of the day, and that's going to be our voice acting. And not a huge cast to discuss here, but we do have several of our series regulars and of course, a guest star as our Aquaman. So let's go ahead and delve into this week's voice cast.
Yeah, a couple of fun minor players, one being Billy West, who's playing one of Lex's henchmen. Best known probably as Fry on Futurama. He's also, I think he's still doing Bugs Bunny in a lot of the more recent Looney Tunes stuff.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure if he's passed that on to someone else, but he was doing Bugs Bunny in the Looney Tunes show and some of those more recent revivals that they had done. But he's just playing one of the background guys in this, but it's one of those voices once you hear it, you're like, oh, that's somebody. I thought maybe it was Tom Kenny at first, but no, it's the other guy who's in every cartoon, that being Billy West. But also in there we have Stuart Pankin as Dr. Carty, and he's one of those guys with, I think, a really recognizable face. He was in things like Congo, Fatal Attraction. And he was one of the anchors on Not Necessarily the News, which is like a proto Daily Show type or Weekend Update SNL type show that ran in the 80s and 90s. I believe he's in the Zeta Project, I want to say, as well. He's actually done quite a few. he is the Condiment King himself, pretty importantly. And then, yeah, he plays Dr. Tanner. Oh, I know why I recognize his name, because he's in the Bucky episodes. Hate that guy.
I don't
hate this actor. I hate the Bucky episodes. Those are really depressing when we get one of those. Anyway, we'll get back to that in the next future month. But here he is playing Dr. Carty. Not a lot for him to do, but worth mentioning. And as mentioned, just briefly, we do have Brad Garrett as Bibbo, taking Lois and Jimmy out on the boat at the start of the episode. Always fun to have him in the mix with David Kaufman as Jimmy, who, again, in the first half of this episode, which, as we talked about, we kind of liked better than the heavier action, you know, environmental drama at the end. David Kaufman, pretty funny in this episode as Jimmy, both in the opening bit where he almost... where he gets his camera eaten by a turtle.
Of course,
Jimmy Olsen, Turtle Boy, probably not a coincidence. But yes, and then you have the bit with him driving around the parking lot trying to get Lois, and he's informing her that he only has a learner's permit, as you just hear the gears grinding of Lois's car, I think is a good bit. We have Clancy Brown as Lex Luthor briefly. He's very just generic bad guy in this one. I felt like this was like a step down for...
He's going to blow up the ocean.
And he can do it because it's an international waters.
That's right.
But yeah, let's get to our main players here. We have Miguel Ferrer as Aquaman, who I think we've talked about a couple other times. He's it's every one of our freaking crossover episodes. He's in Speed Demons. He's the weather wizard. And then he plays the bad guy in Warrior Queen, the Maxima episode. So
yeah,
if you're doing a DC crossover in this series, you need this guy in your show. I like him. I mean, it's hard not to hear Scott Rummel, who takes over the role in Justice League. But I feel like he works as a younger version of that character, knowing where the character goes in the future. He has the same sort of very understated it's somewhat monotone, but I think purposefully so. He's got this very direct way of speaking about him, and seems to, you know, and as we find out, he's a king at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's very, mm-hmm. so it kind of makes sense that he's very strict, straightforward, and there's not a lot of humor to him, other than maybe the bit where he and Lois are in the water.
Yeah, the late Mr. Farrer, you know, he had a, I mean, there, that's a deep masculine voice. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to portray this guy, you're trying to like take away the stigma that he's sort of a lame water-based character that can only be useful or intimidating near the water. You have to kind of characterize him a little bit differently than one might expect. And having him come across, like, he sounds like an announcer. Like, he sounds like he could have been a voiceover guy for a commercial announcing, you know, on the next Law and Order. Like, you know, it's like,
yes,
just the ultimate bass voice, like quite baritone of him. You know, he's got a deep voice. And I actually do think, like, it matches well with Mr. Rummel's, like, they have a similar vocal range and cadence, I thought. So mm-hmm. I think that it does work well once we move forward here. It does feel like the same character because of they didn't go off and cast someone that was completely different or that had a different sounding voice. So I did find it believable. Okay, this guy goes back underwater, grows his hair out, and starts getting super moody over the fact that Earth isn't listening or caring about the damage that they're doing to their home when he comes back in Justice League. So yeah, overall, I thought the performance, there wasn't a lot that was asked of him as far as emotion. Like we said, there are those couple scenes where he has to show a playful side where he's sort of flirting with Lois, and then mm-hmm. You know, the real emotion that he kind of shares throughout, and specifically in that final scene, is the I've had enough of this, I'm a king and I'm drawing the line here and we're going to make a statement here. Mm-hmm. And then when Superman steps in, he sort of has this sort of moment of disbelief where he's backing down, but then, you know, when the humans show their true side, he warns them again that, hey, I'm showing you a little bit of grace this side, and only destroy at this time, only destroying this ship as opposed to whatever else I could destroy, but we're going to be watching. It's a very, very, very intimidating way to leave the episode, as we've mentioned a couple of times. But yeah, I thought his performance, doesn't seem like there was much emotion asked for him to show, but for what he did need to show, for this personification of this character, I thought was effective.
Agreed. And then, of course, we have Dana Delaney as Lois Wayne, kind of our co-lead for this one, because Tim Daly's Superman, not in this episode a terrible amount.
Nope.
It's very much Dana Delaney's episode to carry, and she is good. I don't think she doesn't get a lot to do. She's just kind of reacting. But like I said, I like her more in the first half when she's bouncing off of either David Kaufman as Jimmy or of course Mr. Farrer as Aquaman, because I think she just has kind of, like you said, we have the bit where she's like, oh, you can fly, right? And he says, what? And then they go flying off the cliff is a greatly delivered line by Miss Delaney. So I do enjoy that. And then of course Mr. Daly is Superman. He gets very little to do. I really like that final scene where he and Aquaman are having that very tense standoff, and Aquaman sort of appealing to him, saying, look, they're, it's not like they're only polluting the ocean. Like, this is going to be a problem for you too. And Superman kind of throwing it back that, not everyone on the surface is, deserves to be punished for the sins of the few. And if you go forward with this, I have to stop you. And there's just this really tense standoff that makes you wish there was a part two to this episode.
Right.
So in the limited play we get between Tim Daly and Mr. Farrer as Superman and Aquaman, I think it's great. And then Dana Delaney as Lois, like I said, she gets a lot to do. She gets to be a little comedic, and then she's kind of our POV character for the whole episode. So, All things considered, I ended up settling on another 7 out of 10 for my voice acting score. like I said, I feel like we had a really good cast here. There just wasn't a lot for them to do at a certain point. And it felt like the start of something that could have been even better. But didn't quite get into that third gear at any point, but still a solid job.
Yeah, I ended up giving it an 8 out of 10. Yeah, I think it's everybody did solid, like you said. Mm-hmm. I think Lois having to do a lot of the work here. Dana Delaney is fantastic as usual, and as we said, Mr. Ferrer did an adequate job on what he was asked to do. Yeah, so overall, I think everybody, and I do like I said, that it sort of flows into what the recasting of Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, that it worked out to the advantage there. I think making that character hyper masculine, maybe not with the visuals for this particular episode, but is important to get away from that that stereotype that feels like it's outdated now, like it was outdated like 20 years ago, but it's even more outdated now, that people still are making jokes about, that Aquaman is only relevant when he's near the water or what have you. But yeah, or is only not a very interesting character. I think all of that has been proven wrong by now, but yeah, a good solid episode from our voice cast all around, and reflected in our scores.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here and with our totals for today. So again, not a great overall scorecard from me here, as we ended up suffering, our episode is suffering from my low plot scores and animation scores, but we ended up totaling everything up here. I ended up with a 24 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and I'm just a couple points lower at a 22 out of 40. Rewatchability, unfortunately, arguably, I think you gotta watch this one. It's the introduction of an iconic series into this universe, character that comes back a few times more. Now, obviously, we reviewed his second episode first, so how integral could it be, really? But it's not like they don't explain who Aquaman is or that he's the king of Atlantis or any of that. But
I say this episode doesn't. I mean, it sort of does. It like backdoor pilots the who Aquaman is. Like, you don't get the origin story. You just get like, oh yeah, he's a king later on. Yeah. Oh yeah, he's the king of Atlantis. Oh yeah, he can talk to fish. Oh yeah, he can, like, you get sort of like it's sort of revealed as the episode goes along, but it's not a true origin story for sure.
True. So, but yeah, I still say you got to watch this one, because it's the introduction of Aquaman into the DCAU, and he's one of, despite some, you know, 60 years or so of pop culture taking swipes at him, he's one of the most iconic characters in the whole DC universe. So I think you got to watch this one, even if it's like we've said, the whole is just not as good as the sum of its parts, from the characters used to the voice actors to the soundtrack and everything, just that the writers who worked on the episode, just a lot of talent involved, and it just didn't come together in a really interesting way. But it's still an important episode, because it introduces this character, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like teetering between one thumb up and two thumbs up for this. Like, we don't do half thumbs up, so like, I guess it's just like you said, like, you could watch the Justice League episode, and that episode does its own job of sort of introducing the Aquaman character, but clearly the characters on the show already know who he is. And you don't really miss much by not watching this episode. But at the same time, it's like, if you're going to watch, if you're going to recommend Superman episodes, it's like, hey, should I watch the episode with all the crossover episodes? It's like, yeah, like, it's always cool when superheroes cross over. So yeah, I mean, there's a coolness factor to that. So yeah, I give it a thumbs up for that. I don't know that it's, I guess by definition, since it's his first appearance and it is the same character that continues through the show, it's integral. So I guess two thumbs up for this one. But like, if you accidentally skipped it, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world either, clearly.
yeah.
All right, Liam. Well, let's begin to wrap things up. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. If you would like to support the podcast, as we remind you each and every week, there are several ways to do so. The first is to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app, if you haven't already done so. And if it allows you to leave a review, as it does on Spotify, or if it does on Apple Podcasts, go ahead and leave a 5-star review. Liam, we just got our Spotify Wrapped this week, which is the big thing that all Spotify users celebrate at the end of the year, where they share all of their most listened to music and podcasts. And we've been honored to be featured as the number one podcast for over 24 people. Like 24 people, we're the number one podcast that they listen to. Absolutely insane that many people were like in 135 people's top 10 listened podcasts. So we don't take that very lightly. And we had a perfect 5-star rating all year. So thank you to our listeners. Like, that's super cool. Looking at the list of people and the countries that we're listened to and that have been listening to the pod and the amount of listeners that we have, all of that is super encouraging. And again, you and I we've mentioned this before, like we would do this podcast if no one listened because it's fun for us. And
we did for the first year. So.
Right. Yes. But, we are humbled and honored that people take time out of their weeks to listen to us talk about the old DC cartoons and, have found a reason to keep tuning back in each and every week. So if that is you, if you're listening to this podcast, let us take this moment to say thanks. That's it's humbling and it's super fun that we have people that regularly tune in and listen to us, and they're even like, if you listen to it and we're on your Wrapped and you want to tag us in it, we will certainly share that in our story. Liam's been doing that multiple times already. So thank you for all of you who have tuned in and continue to tune in and listen to the pod. It's pretty awesome, Liam.
Absolutely. Really, really cool to see that. And yeah, it's like you said, we can see percentage wise, our listens are up and our followers are up and all that. And we appreciate that more people are listening. And as always, we appreciate when you share your own thoughts with us, whether that's on Instagram or the artist formerly known as Twitter. We also appreciate you reaching out. So yeah, definitely tag us if we show up in your Spotify, your Wrapped thing. We really like seeing that. It's a nice little serotonin boost. Like Cal said, it's just fun to have even more people out there that want to chat about this stuff with us, because it's a hoot. And the party continues next week, Cal, in installment number 2 of the aforementioned Aqua Phantasma.
That is right, Liam. We are returning once again to one of our favorite Elseworlds to discuss. I don't want to hype this up too much, but it's been hyped up to me from you as maybe your favorite comedy episode. Let's just say that, because yeah, we know that you have some others that take that spot in the top there that we've already reviewed. But it will be returning to the world of Batman the Brave and the Bold with a Aquaman centric episode. And we've gotten a little bit of taste of the Aquaman character in a couple of the episodes, but from what I've heard from you, this is the full Aquaman experience and showcase in Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Absolutely. You're reviewing none other than Aquaman's Outrageous Adventure next week. Aquaman and Mira and their little son go on a road trip across America and have various team ups with various characters from that Brave and the Bold show. So it's the full Aquaman Brave and the Bold experience, and I can't wait to get back to it. Have not seen this episode in years, so spirits are high as we head towards that review.
That's right. Don't forget, also, if you want to support the podcast directly, you can check out the show notes. There's a link there to directly support us with a monthly donation if you'd like to, or check out the store. We just had some Black Friday celebrations. I'm sure there's going to be additional sales for the rest of the month you won't want to miss. Liam, can't wait to revisit the Batman, the Brave, and the Bold next week with you. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye. Bye-bye.